Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills. Sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy lilin land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen. They did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. These words by the American musician Don McLean were inspired by the life and the artwork of Vincent van Gogh, the Dutch post-impressionist painter. Van Gogh, who is now one of the world's most celebrated artists, never achieved fame or commercial success in his lifetime. He struggled with delusions and depression. He was famously institutionalized after cutting off his own ear. Vincent van Gogh tragically died by suicide at just 37 years old. Arguably, his most famous painting, The Starry Night, was inspired by the view from the east-facing window in his asylum room. It is a turbulent and mystical scene showing the night sky as it promises a return to light. Light he was never able to fully experience in his life. One Van Gogh historian says that The Starry Night depicts the painter's religiously inclined longing for the beyond. It is an apocalyptic vision of the final absorption into the cosmos, which gives a never-to-be-forgotten sensation of standing on the threshold of eternity. Standing on the threshold of eternity. That, I believe, is the perfect description for this season of Advent we move into this week. This season of threshold between realities, this season where we acknowledge the dark while also anticipating the light, this season of endings and beginnings, this season of promise, but also of not yet. Not yet. There is a spiritual discipline that comes with not yet, with waiting. But it is a discipline that we often let slide quicker than a bad New Year's resolution. We want to jump to the good stuff, don't we? We want to jump to Christmas, to angels and shepherds and a chubby-cheeked baby in a manger. We want the Norman Rockwell painting. We want the Jacqueline Lawson e-card, especially after almost 2 years of COVID and the overlapping crises of our days. We want to sing in the major notes of joy and gladness of Christmas. That's what they're doing down at the Shoppers Drug Mart and the Starbucks. But before we get there, in the church cycle, it first drones in the minor keys of Advent. As we see in our text today, before we get to the promised Messiah, or the baby of Bethlehem, we first get the stern-faced Jesus approaching his betrayal and crucifixion, picturing the whole universe shaken and turned upside down. God's alternative future is coming, but before that, before they can be rebirth, there is death. Before we reach the beginning, we must go through the end. In both the readings from Jeremiah and Luke that we heard earlier, we encounter texts written to a people who experienced trauma and despair and loss of spiritual identity. Jeremiah, the one we know as the wailing prophet, was speaking to a people who had gone through the destruction of Jerusalem by the armies of Nebuchadnezzar and had been exiled to the foreign land of Babylon. The Old Testament scholar Kathleen O'Connor describes the situation of the people in this way. They were taken captive, dragged from their land, and deprived of their temple. They were beaten, imprisoned, and faced death. And like Jeremiah, they cry out to God in anger and in despair. Likewise, the Gospel of Luke was written after the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem, the spiritual heart of the nation, by the armies of Rome in 70 CE. There's an undercurrent of despair in our readings today, of standing on a threshold but not being able to fully imagine God's promised alternative future. The theologian Anthony Bartlett uses the term the abyss as a metaphor for the injustice and meaninglessness and isolation that can dominate the human condition in times such as these. The abyss is defined by the experience of being left behind, of calling out and not being heard, of no longer playing a significant role in life, socially or economically or emotionally. This is the place of the child who feels that her parents no longer hold her as visible or valuable, or a worker with no work or whose job is oppressive and for whom there is no way out, or an elder funneled into and forgotten in a long-term care home, or Indigenous people dealing with the intergenerational trauma of the residential school system, or the feelings that each of us face when it feels like everything is tumbling down around us in times of sickness of ourselves or someone we love, in the disillusion of a relationship, or in the experience of violence, in the loss of agency, in the loss of identity, in the approach of death. In these times, Jesus says, it will feel like the heavens will be shaken. The whole of the cosmos will be in turmoil. The sea roils, the nations rage, and the sky fills with portents. And the people on the edge of the abyss will faint from fear and foreboding. It will feel like impending doom, like the dawn will never come, like winter will never release its grip, like God's promises are meaningless and empty. It will feel like the tears of Gethsemane, like Van Gogh at his window. It will feel like death. And then a prophet steps forward and says, "Take heart, my people. The days are surely coming when God's promises will be fulfilled." And then Jesus, staring into his betrayal and crucifixion, points to a withered fig tree and marks it as evidence that God's kingdom is near. In darkening days such as these, in a troubled and materialistic culture such as ours, these promises must sound naive, foolish even. People are tired, cynical, angry. We face overlapping economic, environmental, racial, social crises. People don't want promises of some future divine intervention. They want action now. They want answers now. And so this Advent season of waiting, of preparation, of not yet, can feel out of touch with the times. It can feel separate from the rest of the world. It can feel distant from everyday reality. But perhaps that's the point. Perhaps that's the lesson and the gift of Advent. Perhaps encountering time set apart is the way to the alternative future. In March of 2020, right at the start of the pandemic, my father-in-law, who was dying of cancer, came to live with our family. His decline was gradual until about this time last year, when he started needing a lot more support, which, because of COVID outbreaks in hospitals, mostly fell on us, and especially my wife. Shortly after Christmas, we entered into a period of waiting with him, of bringing comfort when we could, but mostly waiting with him so he would not feel so alone. In those last days, the waiting took on a vigil-like character, with candles lit and his favorite music playing. It was a time completely set apart from the regular and the ordinary, both a horrible and a holy time, waiting at the fearful edge of the abyss, standing on the threshold of eternity, not knowing when the end would come, just staying awake, attentive, waiting, waiting, waiting. And then when the time came for him to pass into the great mystery, the song playing in the background was Don McLean's tribute to Vincent van Gogh. Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness of my soul. Shadows on the hills. Sketch the trees and the daffodils. Catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen. They did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Jesus knows that before we reach the beginning, we must go through the end. Easter morning does not happen without Good Friday. And in these days, you can't get to Christmas without journeying through Advent. If we want to live a deep, authentic human life, we don't get to leap over the shadow places, the places where all hope seems lost. And it is precisely into the abyss of human experience that Jesus comes to offer hope and healing and encounter with the holy. It is to the threshold of eternity that we are called to follow him, to light candles, to sit in vigil with a dying loved one, to wait with a traumatized soldier, the desperate refugee family, the isolated prisoner, the residential school survivor, the addict on the steps outside this church right now. There is darkness in this world. The imperial armies desecrate and work to destroy the temple and ruin the sacred heart of the world, not just in first century Palestine, but in the here and now. There are death-dealing forces beyond the control of any of us. We do not bring about God's intended alternative future through the sheer force of our will, but through our attentive waiting, we place ourselves in the posture so that when the time is right, we might become partners with God in the advent of a new reality. In an overheated, reactionary, stressed-out culture that wants everything right now, sometimes the most radical form of discipleship is to light a candle in the darkness and wait in vigil for the dawn. The United Church of Canada's faith statement, A Song of Faith, ends this way. We place our hope in God. We sing of a life beyond life and a future good beyond imagining, a new heaven and a new earth, the end of sorrow, pain, and tears, Christ's return and a life with God, the making new of all things. As children of the Timeless One, our time-bound lives will find completion in the all-embracing Creator. In the meantime, we embrace the present, embodying hope, loving our enemies, caring for the earth, choosing life. The key phrase there, I think, is in the meantime. In the meantime. To be a Christian is to live with grace in the space between things, between endings and beginnings, birth and death, heaven and earth, incarnation and culmination. To be a Christian is to find hope in the not yet, to give mission and purpose to our waiting, to see life as not something to be consumed or controlled, but to be savored in holy vigil. We light our candles, not in an attempt to dominate the darkness, but to shed enough light to see each other, to see that we're not alone. The seemingly foolish promise of faith is that despite every evidence to the contrary, darkness and death do not get the last word. standing on the threshold of eternity, staring out the window into the starry, starry night, we make the hope-filled proclamation that the dawn will break, the spring will come, the fig tree will blossom again, and in the fullness of God's love, creation itself will be healed and renewed. But in the meantime, we embrace the present. We embody hope. We love without limits. We care for this earth. We choose life. Amen.